And we're holding on Peihei Omid Beis, three lines from the bottom. We learned in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda Omim Yeshem Tfisas Yad B'cholah. Rabbi Yehuda had said that if you have a person owns houses or apartments in the Chatzar, and he has Tfisas Yad over there, meaning that he has something, he has a place in the apartment where he keeps things of his, then the tenant is not oyser, meaning he's considered in effect a guest of the Balabais. So the Gemara asks, Hefi Domi Tfisas Yad, what do we mean by a Tfisas Yad? What's an example of that? So Kagon Chatzerish of Bunyas Ben Bunyas. For example, the Chatzer that belonged to Bunyas Ben Bunyas, okay, a different view, sorry, it's over here, Ben Nanas, whatever. The point is that Rashi says he was very rich, so he would lend out houses in his Chatzer to other people. But he, being a rich person, had a lot of kalim, so he stored some of his kalim in those houses. There's other rishonim that say it wasn't kalim per se, it was merchandise of his, whatever. The point is that he had stuff of his in their houses or in their apartments. So since the Gemara is mentioning this Ben Bunyas, so the Gemara tells a story about him, Osel Kameh de Rebbe. He came as a Talmud to Rebbe. So Rebbe says to the other Talmidim, Panu Mokim Leben Meya Mona, clear a place for the person who has 100 mona. A mona is 100 zuz, so 100 mona would be 10,000 zuz, so in other words, he's very rich. So clear a space for him, as the Gemara is going to say in a couple of lines, Rebbe used to give covered to rich people. So he's rich, so show him covered, clear a nice place for him in the Beis Medrash. Also in a Shachrina, then another person came, who was also rich, Amalahu, and Rebbe says, Panu Mokam Ben Masayim Mana, make a space for the person who has 200 mana, an even more chashuv place, because he's richer, he deserves more covered. Amalafon of Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi, so Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi says, what do you mean? The second person is not richer than the first one, than Ben Bunyas. As a matter of fact, you should know, Aviv Shalzeh, this Ben Bunyas's father, the name Bunyas, Yeshle Elef Sfinis Bayam, he has 1,000 ships in the sea, or Kenegdon, and corresponding to them, Elef Ayores Bayabasha, 1,000 cities on the land. So he's extremely rich. What do you mean, this Hayav Ramosha? He's extremely rich, Pevav Amadala, third line. So he's extremely rich. What do you mean that he's only Ben Meyamana, that he only has 100 times 100 dinner, and the other, Atzuz, whatever, and the other one has 200? Amaloi, so Rebbe says, okay, in that case, I didn't know that, actually. L'chshetagia etzel aviv. The next time you visit this Ben Bunyas's father, Emerloi, tell him, al tashagreu b'kelem alol l'fanai. Don't send your son to me, to the yeshiva, wearing these clothing. In other words, the clothing that Ben Bunyas was wearing, it wasn't the kind of clothing that showed how rich he was, relative to what you would expect a person of such riches to be wearing. The clothing was not it was cheaper than that. So therefore, Rebbe is saying, in effect, you look at Ben Bunyas versus you look at this other guy. On the surface, at least, this guy seems to be richer. If in fact Ben Bunyas's father is richer, then his son should be wearing clothing appropriate to that. Okay, so the Gemara mentions in this connection, Rebbe Mechabed Ashirim, Rebbe used to honor rich people. Rebbe Akiva also Mechabed Ashirim. Rebbe Akiva also used to honor rich people. Now, why did they honor them? So the Gemara says, Kedidorash Rava Bar Mori, as we find that Rava Bar Mori Darshin, about the importance of rich people, Apostle Kintilim says, Yeshiv Olam Lefnei Elikim, he will sit forever in front of Hashem, Chesed Ve'emes Manyin Siruhu, Chesed and truth, man, Rashi says man is Loshen Mezoinus, means food, Yin Siruhu will preserve him, which means, in other words, so he says, So what makes it that the world is able to stand and the world is able to firmly exist in front of Hashem when this man, when you have rich people who do gemilas chasadim and they give tzedakah and they give food for the poor people, they give man, they give food, that's yin siruhu. They preserve the world in existence. So therefore, these rich people are great Baalei Tzedakah, and therefore Rebbe and Rebbe Akiva honored them. There's actually a number of different ideas that the various Meforshim give on top of what the Gemara is saying over here, that they honored them for their riches. And by the way, it's interesting, in Ein Yaakov, actually, right there's a different Gemara in Beitza that talks as a derogatory thing about rich people. The Gemara says over there, the rich people above all go to Gehenna because they don't give proper tzedakah. The Ein Yaakov, when he assembled the Agadtas in the Gemara in Ein Yaakov, usually he just has them in the order of the Gemaras. But here he puts these two right next to the other. He takes our Gemara over here from Erevin, and right after it, he puts the one in Beitza to show the contrast. If the rich person is a Baal Tzedakah, then like we're saying over here in the Gemara, he deserves to be honored, and in his schus, the whole world continues to exist. On the other hand, if like the ones that it mentions in Beitza over there, they're not Baal Tzedakah, then the other way around. On the side over here, Gilyon HaShas, Rabbi Akiva Eger, brings from Likutei Maharil another reason why. So if it's important to honor rich people, why did Davka, Rebbe, and Rabbi Akiva do that? Why don't we find necessarily that the other Chachamim did the same thing? So he says an interesting thing. He says, Rebbe himself was extremely rich. We find that in many places in Shas. Actually, the Ein Yaakov shiur that I'm giving in the afternoons currently, we were just talking about that yesterday. So Rebbe was extremely rich. Rabbi Akiva, we also know from the same Gemara, also eventually became extremely rich. They didn't want people should honor them for their Torah. So they would get in the habit of honoring rich people this way. If people are honoring them, they're doing it for the honor of their wealth rather than for the honor of their Torah. And this way, they're not using Keser Shel Torah. This is the Maharil says this, and then Rabbi Akiva Eger brings it over here. There's a number of other ideas that the different Mefarshim bring. One interesting one, Rabbi Yaakov Emden brings an interesting one. He says, usually people don't honor rich people. Usually, unfortunately, the world and then people's nature is being what it is, often people are jealous of rich people. So people don't always give them a lot of kavod. The problem is that, you know, we say in Pirkei Avos, Ezo Mechobad HaMechabed Es Abrius. So what did Rebbe do? He would Davka go out, Rebbe and Rabbi Akiva would go out of their way to give rich people covered. This way, the rich people will have the experience, will have the pleasant experience of receiving covered. And that way, they in turn will realize, how do we really get covered? By giving covered to other people and giving tzedakah, as the Gemara is saying over here. One other idea, I mean, like I said, there's a lot of different ideas that the various Mefarshim talk about it. The Chidah says that since a rich person, the Eibishter gave them so much wealth, meaning they have so much ability to accomplish Avodas Abirurim, they have so much of an ability to be poil on the world more than other people. Therefore, they deserve honor for that. If in fact they're doing that therefore they have much more capability. Okay, anyway, getting back to the Gemara. So again, the reason why we brought this in is we were giving this Ben Bunyas as an example of somebody who, he had houses in a courtyard. He stored things of his own in those houses. And therefore, Rabbi Yehuda is saying in the Mishnah that would be an example where the landlord therefore has tfisas yad. He has an area in that house that's reserved for something of his, and therefore the people who live in that house are considered his guests and don't have to contribute individually to the Eruv Chatzeres. We said yesterday there's the opinion of Rabbeinu Yohanan on the Rif, who says that would only apply if the only people living in the Chatzer are the landlord and these tenants who have the tfisas yad in their houses. But not if you have other people living in the chatzer and the food is being and the eruv food is being placed in one of those other houses, then the people who have tfisas yad would also have to contribute. Okay. Anyway, continues the Gemara. Rabbi Baba Chana Omar. Rabbi Baba Chana disagrees with what we said before, that it was just stam, anything that's stored in the house that belongs to the landlord is enough to be considered tfisas yad. He says kagun yosed shamach resha. For example, it would have to be like the blade of a plow. Now, the point is, the blade of a plow is something, it's mukta. In fact, it's an example, we learn in Masechta Shabbos, it talks about, it's an example of mukta machmas chisorin kis. You would never use it for any other purpose, because you don't want it to get broken or dulled or whatever. Therefore, you can't move it on Shabbos for any purpose, even if you need it for some other, even if you want to use it for some other purpose, which is tzorach gufay, even if it's in the way and you need to move it, which is tzorach mekoymoy, you still can't move it. So therefore, so that would be considered tfisas yad. Omer Rav Nachman, Tana Dvei Shmuel. So Rav Nachman says, yeah, we learned in the Braisa from the Yeshiva of Shmuel, Dover on Nitol B'Shabbos Oyser, only something that could be picked up on Shabbos still asers, it's not considered Tfisas Yad, because he could remove it if he wanted to. It's a machlokes among the poskim. What do we mean? Who could remove it? Is it that we're saying that the tenant could remove it if he wanted to, or are we saying that the landlord could remove it if he wanted to? That's negei al halacha, of course. But if it's something that can't be removed on Shabbos, then it doesn't aser. Which, of course, means something that's muktzah, like we just said. Another example, now even not just anything that's muktzah, because many things that are muktzah are still, as we just said, you can move them l'tzorach gufay or l'tzorach mekoymay. So let's say, for example, he stores over there, let's say he stores over there something, something which is mukta, but could be moved l'tzorach gufay or mekoymay. Let's say, for example, certain appliances are mukta, but you could still move them if you want to stand on them or whatever. So that wouldn't necessarily be considered tfisas yad, since you could move it for that purpose, and therefore it's not fixed in place. The Magen Avraham also brings up a possibility, actually not the Magen Avraham, earlier poskim than him bring up the possibility, he questions this, but anyway, maybe it would also include something which is particularly heavy. It may not be muktzah, but practically speaking, it's heavy and you're not going to move it on Shabbos. So that would be considered tfisas yad. Tanya nami hachi gilun, similarly in a b'raisa, yesh le tevel, suppose that the landlord has in the apartment food which is tevel, which is muktzah on Shabbos, and again, it's muktzah machmas gufay, it's not the kind of thing that you can move l'tzorach gufay or l'tzorach mekoymay, or yesh le ashoshis, or if he has large, heavy chunks of metal, same idea, b'chol davar she'en a nito b'Shabbos, or anything else which is not picked up on Shabbos, meaning either, again, according to everybody, if it's muktzah, and according to some poskim also, which is accepted la'alacha, also if they're heavy and they physically, you're not going to move them, then the result is that whoever lives in that house is not asering because again, there is tfisas yad, it's considered in a certain sense as if the landlord lives in that apartment. One consideration you do have, we talked about this briefly yesterday, is the question, let's say, for example, nowadays, in a lot of buildings, you often have, you move into an apartment, and the landlord supplies various appliances. You come in there, you have a fridge, you have a stove, you have other, so are those considered tfisas yad? On the one hand, I mean, they are muktzah items, and some of them, like a fridge, are pretty big and heavy, and you're not really going to be moving them. The tenant can't just take them out if he wants. On the other hand, maybe the landlord could, but not necessarily because they're included in the lease. On the other hand, there is the consideration, everything that we were talking about until now, all the tfisas yad, all the examples of tfisas yad we were giving are something which the landlord himself stores there and he uses it when he needs it. As opposed to over here, the appliances in an apartment, they're not there for the landlord to use, they're there for the tenant to use. So maybe that shouldn't count. So the poskim achronim discuss this back and forth. I think Rav Moshe is makel and says that it would count as tfisas yad. The Chazon Ish, I think, is machmer, and you have a string of rabbonim on both sides of the issue whether it would be considered tfisas yad or not. Which of course is negeya. You know, you live in an apartment building. If the landlord, let's say in an apartment building is not necessarily a good example because if the landlord himself lives in the apartment building, owner occupied as they call it, and you have all the tenants then have these fridges and stoves and whatever that the landlord supplies, then based on what we're saying, maybe that would be then maybe they shouldn't need an eruv chatzeres in the building. So it's machlokas among the poskim achronim whether they would need or not. Again, if there are other people who live in the, you also have the question: does this apply if goyim live in the building? Do you need schiras reshus from them? That's also a consideration that comes up. And again, if you have other people living in the building who don't have appliances supplied by the landlord, then according to Rabbeinu Yohanan, it wouldn't work anyway because anyway they have to participate in the eruv, and according to him, therefore, so would everybody else. Okay. Mishnah says, Hameniach Beisel, if a person left his house, v'holach lishbos be'ir acheres, and he meant to spend Shabbos in a different city, echad nachri v'echad Yisrael, whether it was a goy or whether it was the Jew, hareza oyster, he's still asering, meaning, in other words, if he was a goy, you still have to arrange siras rishus with him, otherwise you can't make an eruv and carry in the chotzer, and if it was a Yisrael, then again, he needs to either participate in the eruv or he needs to be mevatel rishus. Divrei Reb Meir, this is what Reb Meir says, because Reb Meir says, even though the house is right now unoccupied, Reb Meir holds dira b'loy b'ilim shma dira. The fact that it doesn't have anybody living in it right now is neither here nor there, says Reb Meir. Actually, when we learned this previously, we learned this. We learned this at the beginning of the sixth Perek, and actually we gave a different reason over there why Rav Meir would say, as we said, because the person might return on Shabbos. Okay, Rav Yehuda Omer Eina Oiser. Rav Yehuda says he doesn't aser because as long as there's nobody in the house, it's not considered a dira. Rav Yosi Omer. Rav Yosi says it depends. Nochri Oiser Yisrael Eina Oiser. If it's a goy, he still asers because the goy could return in the middle of Shabbos. Yisrael ain't oiser, but if it was Yisrael that he's not asering because he's not going to return. She'en derech Yisrael lovei b'Shabbos because the Yisrael is not going to return in the middle of Shabbos. If he went to a different city, he's not going to return, but the goy may return in the middle of Shabbos. Reb Shimon Omer. Reb Shimon says, never mind, you're talking about that he went to a different city. Even if he left his house for Shabbos and went to spend Shabbos by his daughter in the same city, he still doesn't answer. He could return back in the middle of Shabbos. No, he put it out of his mind. He's not planning to return for Shabbos. He plans to spend the whole rest of Shabbos by his daughter in the same city. Therefore, Reb Shimon says that he doesn't answer. So the Gemara says, "Omer Rab halacha ki Reb Shimon." So the halacha is like Reb Shimon, that even if he's in the same city, as long as he see a milibo, then it's fine. But the Gemara says, "V'davka bitoy." Why does Reb Shimon specifically mention that he went to spend Shabbos by his daughter? Why davka his daughter? Avol b'noy loy. But not if he goes to spend Shabbos by his son, because then it's more likely that he's going to come back in the middle of Shabbos. The Amri Inchi, as people have an expression, Novach Bachalba, if a male dog barks at you, then you can still go in. In other words, you can find a way to make things work with it. But Onovach Baguyasa, but if a female dog barks at you, cook, then go out, you're not going to be able to reason with it, you're not going to be able to get anywhere. So the same way, in other words, a person is more likely to get along, a person is more likely to get along with his son-in-law than with his daughter-in-law. So if he's going to spend Shabbos by his son, who was married to his daughter-in-law, then there's more of a chance that during Shabbos an argument is going to break out, and he's going to find it very uncomfortable to be there, and therefore leave in the middle of Shabbos and return home. Whereas if he goes to spend Shabbos by his daughter and her husband, his son-in-law, then even if he and his son-in-law are on the outs, it's easy enough relatively for them to patch it up and for him to be able to be comfortable spending the rest of Shabbos there. The Meshech Chochma, by the way, brings an interesting thing related to this in this week's parasha. In this week's parasha, you have when the Malachim have come to tell Loit that they're going to destroy Sodom. So what does the Pasuk say? Vayetze Loit by Dabar Chasson of Loit Chibnoisav. The Loit goes to speak to his sons-in-law who are married to his daughters to convince them we need to get out of the city. And the Pasuk says they laughed at him. So now, Lechora, he had sons as well. Now the Medrash says he has only daughters, but the Ramban and the Meshech Chochma assume that he had sons as well, who are also married and they're living elsewhere in the city. Why didn't he go talk to them? So the Meshech Chochma says, based on this Gemara, because he realized at least with his sons-in-law and his daughters, at least he has a chance, like the Gemara is saying over here. But he realized with his daughters-in-law and his sons, he's got no chance even of convincing them in the first place. So it would be at best he could try them next, but then he ran out of time because as it was late in the morning. And the Malachim had to take him out right away, but he relates that to our Gemara over here. Anyway, so that's the bottom line, therefore, is that if the Yid left to go and spend Shabbos elsewhere in town, then as long as he planned at the beginning of Shabbos to go away, then even if he returns in the middle of Shabbos, it's not a problem because we have the concept Shabbos kiven shahutra hutra. On the other hand, if it was a goy, if he returns in the middle of Shabbos, then it does create a problem. Then he does aser the eruv because they should have expected in the first place that there's a pretty fair chance that he's going to return in the middle of Shabbos because after all, he can travel. Okay. From here until the rest of the perek, so the next three blot or so, we're going to be dealing with dinim having to do with water and chatzeres on Shabbos. So we touched on these dinim before. Now we're going to start talking about them in detail. So the Mishnah starts, Bereshit Shtei Chatzeres. If there is a well between two Chatzeres. Now, previously, we had a case yesterday where there was a well in an alley, in a side alley between Chatzeres, where the Chatzeres don't open into the alley. They reach over from their roofs and they draw, well, not from their roofs, from their windows, rather, and they draw water from the well that way. Here we're talking about a different scenario. Here we're talking about that you have a well which is actually physically located, half of it in one chatzer and half in another, and you have the wall of the chatzer actually goes over the well. It doesn't go into the well. That's what we're going to discuss in the Gemara. But it goes over the well, and you have over on top of the well, therefore, you have a partition. But I hopefully whoever's on the video can see the picture. You don't have the wall doesn't go into the well, but it goes directly over it. So ein memalim yimenu b'Shabbos. So the Mishnah says you can't fill up, neither side can fill up from that well on Shabbos because each one is filling up from the other's rishus. Unless, of course, they made a joint eruv, but we're assuming over here they didn't make a joint eruv. So they can't fill up water from that water pit on Shabbos. Eliyim kein osalay mechitza gavaya asara tfachim, unless they made for it a mechitza which is at least 10 tfachim tall. Bein milamata bein mitoich oignoi. Or Ben on the side over here, it brings that the Rif and the printed Mishnayos and the Rif have a Girsa Ben Milamaila, Ben Milamata, Ben Mitech Ognoi. So the Mechitza has to be from above, from below, or from within the basin, from within the hollow space of the burr. We'll see in the Gemara a couple of possibilities what these mean. Reb Shimon Gamliel says you should know that this isn't Lakule Alma. Not everybody agrees with this that we just said. You should know, Reb Shimon Gamliel says that actually this Shammai says that the Mechitza has to be Lamata, as we'll see in the Gemara what the definition of Milamata is. Or Bisiloim and Milamaila, and Bisil says it's enough if it's Milamaila. And then you have as the Mishnah had previously said, Bein Mitoich Oignoi, that it can be someplace in, it has to be someplace inside the basin. Meaning, Rashi says, now, if the Mechitza went all the way from the top all the way to the bottom, then of course there's no Chiddush, it would be allowed. But even though we're saying, even if you make a Mechitza, and not all of it is, and it's above the surface of the water, as we'll see in the Gemara, nevertheless it can be Mutter. This is one of those things where we say, Kal Hushe Kelu Chachamim B'mayim, that the Chachamim made Kulus when it comes to water, because water is such a basic necessity, that they were the Chachamim allowed a Mechitza which is above the surface of the water, even though, which is still above the surface of the water, as long as it's inside the hollow of the well, as we'll see in the Gemara. Amr of Yehuda, loitehei mechitza gdolim, and akosel shebeneim. Rabbi Yehuda says, what do you need that for? A mechitza that you're going to build inside the burr shouldn't be greater and more important than the actual wall that goes over the top of the burr, like we just showed in the picture over there. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, in other words, there's no need for a new mechitza at all. You already have a mechitza. The same way, as we just said, that you can have a mechitza where the end of it is above the surface of the water, and we say that's okay. Rabbi Yehuda says, in that case, the same thing would apply to the regular wall of the chotzer that goes above the well. Okay. So the Gemara starts off. Amar Rav Huna, we have to define what the words lamata and lamaila mean in our Mishnah. So again, we have the Tanakhama had just said that you need lamata or mitoich oignoi, or the girsa of the rif is lamaila or lamata or mitoich oignoi. And Rav Shimon Gamliel tells us that it's actually machlokes, but Shammai requires it to be milamata, and Basil means says milamaila. So we have to define our terms. What's lamata in this sense? What's lamaila? And then we'll. So Amar Rav Huna, lamata, lamata, mamish, lamaila, lamaila, mamish. So Rav Huna says lamata means close to the water. So in other words, he would say that. So he would say. In other words, let's say, for example, so here are some pictures. So you have Lamata would be, for example, let's say the well is half full at this point. So what you do is Beshama would be saying that you build the wall. So you don't build it from the top of the well. You build it someplace from the middle of the well until the surface of the water, and that's considered Lamata. And Basil would say it's enough to do it Lamaila. Ms. Hiller would say that you can just start from the top and work your way down, as long as it's 10 tefachim tall, even though it ends far above the surface of the water. That's Rav Huna's understanding. Rav Yehuda, lamata means lamata min amayim, lamayla means lamayla min amayim. Rav Yehuda says, no, both lamata and lamayla mean that it's in the water. But lamata means that the wall begins at the bottom of the well and goes all the way almost until the top of the water. It doesn't have to extend above the surface of the water. It could if you want to, of course, but it doesn't have to extend above the surface of the water. But according to Bishrama, it has to start at the bottom and work its way up. And according to Basila, Lamaila would mean Lamaila, and Amayim would mean like Lamaila would be similar to what would actually be similar to what Rav Huna had defined as Lamata, meaning, in other words, that it can be the whole thing can be above the surface of the water. It doesn't have to start at the floor. Okay. So those are the two opinions. Amalei Rava bar Avchanan la Abaya. So Rava bar Avchanan says to Abaya, Hod Amar of Yehuda lamata min amayim. Now let's focus on Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. If you say lamata means lamata min amayim, again, the Shammai would be saying that you have to start at the bottom of the well and then work your way up until you reach at least 10 tefachim. The question is then, Maishna Lamata Mamish. So why would it be that if you have that, so why is it if it's Lamata meaning Mamish, meaning like Rav Huna understood, which it's still above the surface of the water. The problem is the loy. According to the Behoda, apparently even Beis Shammai says that wouldn't work, or Beis Shammai would say that wouldn't work. Da'arivi Maya, because after all, the water mixes together under the mechitza. What good does it do to have a mechitza there that's above the water if below the mechitza, the water is still freely mixing from one side to another? Well, lamatam and amayim nami ha'arivi maya. So how does it help if you make it lamatam and amayim? So fine, you start at the bottom of the well and you go all the way up to 10. You go all the way up ten tefachim. So what? The water isn't necessarily only 10 tefachim deep. What if the water is 20 tefachim deep? You still have the water is mixing above the mechitza. So according to Rav Huna, we can understand. Fine, if the point is that you just need to have if according to Rav Huna, neither Beis Shammai nor Beis Hillel requires the mechitza to touch the water, then the question is just how close to the water does it need to be? Then okay, fine. In other words, the point is they only need it symbolically, just so you remember that there's halachas about not carrying from one chatzar to another, and that's that. But according to Rav Yehuda, if Beis Shammai is requiring you to make it all the way from the bottom, then according to them, they shouldn't just say 10 tefachim is enough. You should have to say it has to be as tall, as high as the as high as the actual water goes. So Abaya answers him. Haven't you heard of what Rav Yehuda, the same Rav Yehuda, the Amora, said in the name of Rav? Umatu ba mishum Rav Chia, or some say that instead it wasn't Rav, it was Rav Chia. Yes, as a matter of fact, you do have to have that the upper edges of the reeds or the bamboo or whatever that you're using for the mechitza does have to stick up above the water at tefach. So there's the answer. In other words, it's not just Beis Shammai. It's not just we'd be saying, well, according to Beis Shammai, it's Beis Shammai. According to the Tanakhama, there's no machlok, there's Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel. Everybody agrees you could do Lamaila or Lamata. So Lamata would actually be, you're right, it has to be 10 tefachim tall, but also, in addition, you have to have one tefach of that has to stick out above the surface of the water. So if the water is, let's say, 15 tefachim deep, then you would need a mechitza. If you're going to start lamata, then you would need a mechitza 16 tefachim tall. 15 from the bottom until the surface of the water, and then another tefach to stick up above the water. So actually that's how Rashi learns that it means you'd have to start at the bottom, and then in addition you need another tefach sticking out of the top. Tosfos says that no, all you really need is that you have a mechitza asara. All you need is that 10 tefachim of the mechitza should be in the water. Even according to Beis Shammai, that would be good enough because you have a mechitza asara, and that's enough of a heker. Whereas Basila would be saying the other way around, that most of the mechitza can be above the water. So for two, then the Gemara continues. Now here's another one. Hada Amar of Yehuda Lamaila Lamaila Min Amayim. Again, let's look at what Rav Yehuda had said, that the word Lamaila, according to the Tanakhama, was according to the Tanakhama, the Girsa that we had in the Mishnah didn't have the word Lamaila at all. According to Rav Shimon Gamliel, this is Basila, is saying it's Milamaila. That can be Milamaila. And Rabbi Yehuda had said Lamaila means Lamaila min Amayim, means that the whole Mechitza is above the water. So it's inside the hollow of the well, it's inside the pit of the well, but the end of the Mechitza is above the water. So again, the question is Maishna Lamaila Mamish. So what's the difference? Why would we say that it's no good if it's literally Lamaila, like Rabbi Yehuda said, all the way at the top of the well, and it's no good, according to Rabbi Yehuda? Deloy, it's no good. Da'arivi Maya, because the water mixes underneath it, because after all, the mechitza is not touching the water at all, so it's not preventing the water from mixing from one side to another. Nu, l'mailam and amayim nami. So how does it help if it's above the surface of the water? The same thing, ha'arivi Maya. The same thing, even if it's right above the surface of the water still mixes underneath it. And again, Omale, and again, Abaya tells him, Loi Shmiya Lachod Betoni Yaakov Kalchina, haven't you heard the Braisa that Yaakov Kalchina taught? Sorech Shishakea, Rosh Ekanem, Mamayim Tefach. That, yeah, if you're going to make the Mechitza above the water, that's fine. But you have to have at least one Tefach of the sticks that make up the Mechitza goes down into the water. And that way, it's true, obviously, it's not preventing all the water from mixing. But after all, Tosfos points out, we learned earlier in the Mechitza, that look, I mean, even if you put a Mechitza Shel Barzel over there, it wouldn't physically prevent any of the water from mixing. But once you have that, once you have that hecker, then that's good enough. So in short, in other words, if you're going to make the mechitza within the water, then it has to stick out above the water one tefach. And if you're going to make the mechitza above the water, beginning from above the water, then it has to be 10 tefachim tall, and one tefach of that has to be down in the water. Okay. So the Gemara asks the Ela Hoda Amr of Yehuda. Okay, but what about this that Rav Yehuda? Again, the same Rav Yehuda who said Lamata means Lamata min Amayim and Lamaila means Lamaila min Amayim. So he's saying, in other words, that. So in other words, the way we've just explained it is Rav Yehuda is saying, fine, according to Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, respectively, you can have the Mechitza within the water or above the water, but you have to have some part of it sticking out above the water or some part of it sticking down into the water, respectively. But what about, the same Rav Yehuda says, Koira arba materas b'churva. He says that if you have a ruined house, you have a partially destroyed house, but let's say you still have a beam that's at least 4 tefachim wide, that is still there. As Rashi points out, sometimes you have, let's say, a house has partially collapsed, but not all the roof has fallen in, but not all the roof beams have fallen down. You still have beams here and there. So suppose you still have a beam that's 4 tefachim wide, that extends across the churva, then materes the churva, then it would be mutter to carry underneath that beam. So Rashi explains that there's two considerations that we have over here. We say because the beam is 4 tefachim wide, so we say that first of all there's a concept called mechitza tluya. It's a hanging mechitza because it's above the ground. Nevertheless, that would be okay according to this opinion. Now the halacha is not like that. The halacha, as we're going to discuss later in the Gemara, is mechitza tluya is no good. But Rav Yehuda would be going according to the opinion that mechitza tluya is fine. So therefore, it's considered a mechitza even though it's hanging above the surface over there. And we would say because the thing is 4 tefachim wide, we would say pitikra yerid v'sosim. We would say the ends of the beam are considered to come down and form a space underneath them. That's why it has to be 4 tefachim wide. Otherwise, it's not wide enough to. Otherwise, it's not wide enough to be considered a mokum for it to be considered a tikra. But so according to Rashi, those are the two considerations. According to Tosfos, gets into a discussion of it and says not necessarily would we have to say it depends on mechitza tluya. Forget about mechitza tluya. The halacha, in fact, is mechitza tluya is no good. But just pitikra, yod v'sosim over here would be good enough. So Rav Yehuda's din. So according to Tosfos, Rav Yehuda's din would actually apply, this din about the kora abba would apply according to everybody. Because you have pitikra yod v'sosim. Okay. And Rav Nachman Amar Rav Bavur, so more relevant to our sugya over here, Rav Nachman says in the name of Rav Bavur, Kora Arba Materes B'mayim. The same thing if you have a beam 4 tefachim wide and it's over the burr between the two chatzeres. So Materes B'mayim. So it also matir. So it's also matir the water to be used. So we have to ask, so how would that help? Based on what we just said, that you have to have a mechitza that partially goes into the water, or mostly is in the water and sticks up a little bit above it. So you have to ask, what do you mean? So how would a koda 4 tefachim wide above the well help? After all, haka ozel, fine, you're going to say the water mixes and you don't care about the water mixing because you have a hecker. Okay, but don't you have the problem, haka ozel dli le'idach gisa umaisi? Don't you have the problem, you put your bucket into the water to draw water, the bucket is going to go, it can go under the entire koda, under the whole 4 tefach wide of the koda, and go into the other side, and end up taking water from there. So fine, forget about the question of whether the actual water molecules we're on one side or the other. Fine, we say we don't care about that as long as there's a hecker. But practically speaking, you can't actually be putting your bucket into the other side of the well and drawing from it when you haven't made a joint eruv between the two chatzeres. So how does a koda arba help with that? And the answer is kimlohu l'rabbanan de'in dli mahalach yosem arba tefachim. Okay, but the Rabbanan know for a fact that the bucket is never going to travel more than 4 tefachim. When you draw water from a well, you're not going to allow your bucket's not that large. You're not going to go. You're not going to have where you put it in on one side of the well. It's going to end up traveling under the entire koda a distance of 4 tefachim. And then be getting from the other side. So as long as you have a 4 tefach wide, as long as you have then a koda 4 tefachim wide or more over the well, then you're good. Okay, but you still have the question tachas koda mi aha rivi maya. Still though, doesn't the water mix under the koda? So again, based on what we just said before, that according to Rav Yehuda, at least you have to have the mechitza going down into the water. So why over here are we allowing it with a koda which is just above the water and not going down into the well at all? Ella, so no, we have to say the reason is the reason must be because the chachamim made special kulas when it comes to water. Which means, in other words, Rashi says, by saying Ella over here, what we're saying is that, we're saying never mind what Rabbi Yehuda said. Rabbi Yehuda said before about the mechitza has to stick up partially above the water, or it has to partially go down into the water. Now the Gemara is saying, never mind that. We can accept Rav Huna's opinion that the mechitza can be completely above the water as long as it's someplace inside the lip of the well. Because Kalushe Kelo Chachamim Mayim, therefore on those grounds also the koda that is standing over the well over there would also be good enough. Mechitza Tluya. Well, that's what we're going to talk about later. That's what we're going to talk about that soon, about Mechitza Tluya. But right. So according to Rashi, now what the Gemara has ended up doing is saying, forget about what Rav Yehuda said. We can't accept it. La Halacha, we have to accept what Rav Huna says. La Halacha. On the other hand, Tosfos and a number of other Rishonim don't have the word Ella in the Gemara over here, and they say that even according to Rav Yehuda, we would say that Rav Yehuda is saying that usually you need the mechitza to be sticking up above the water or hanging down a little bit into the water. However, there's another kula that we're going to say when you have a board, which is when you have a koda 4 tefachim wide sitting on top of the well, then that's good enough for our purposes either. It doesn't go down into the well at all. That's another example because it's 4 tefachim wide, and therefore it's wide enough for us to apply for it to be considered as though the area under that koda was enclosed by walls, then therefore that's good enough even though, again, the actual physical water underneath it is mixing. And especially because we said that the actual bucket is not going to be able to travel 4 tefachim under the koda anyway. You're not going to let it out of your hand that far for it to go underneath the koda from one side to another. No, so that's the thing. So you have the hole is very wide, and you have a koda 4 tefachim wide extending across the entire thing. Yeah. So now you have one side of the hole where you can put in your bucket from your side, the other side where they can do it from their side. So yeah. So therefore that would work. So there's, by the way, there's an interesting, in the Chuvas of the Rosh, there's a Chuva that his son, who later on wrote the Tur, wrote to him asking a number of points on our Gemara. One of them is he asks, what do you mean that we're saying over here that a Koda Dalad Tfachim is good enough? In the Mishnah, we said that Rabbi Yehuda is saying the wall that's built over the well should be good enough, and the Chachamim disagree with him. Why all of a sudden are we saying in the Gemara over here that a Koda 4 Tfachim wide over the well should accomplish the same thing? So here you have, the chaseras are built with a wall between them, and the wall passes over the middle of the burr. Rabbi Yehuda, the Tana, in the Mishnah says that's not good, that's good enough, but the Chachamim disagree with him. But over here, all of a sudden we're saying that if you have a koda 4 tefachim wide, then it's good enough. So let the wall be 4 tefachim wide, and it should also be good. And the Rosh answers him because the difference is that here the koda was put there specifically for this purpose, to be matir the well. So it's different than a wall which was just built there, stam, in order to divide the two chaseras, where there's no hekker in it at all, that there's no hekker as far as the dinim of Shabbos regarding it. No, if they have it going into the bird, that itself is a hecker. When they build, that's the point. When they build the mechitza down into the below the lip of the bird, that demonstrates they're doing it for the purposes of Shabbos. But if you just have the wall that goes over the well and doesn't go down into it at all, yeah. Okay. We said in the Mishnah, Amr Rabbi Yehuda loy tehei mechitza. Rabbi Yehuda, the Tana, argues in the Mishnah that, after all, you have a mechitza that passes over the well, that divides the two chatzeres. That should be good enough by itself. What do you need a mechitza down inside the well itself, like we were just saying? So Amr Rabbi Babachana, Amr Rabbi Yechanan, Rabbi Yehuda b'shittas Rabbi Yosi, Amr. Rabbi Yehuda, in this opinion, in the Mishnah, is following the shitta of Rabbi Yosi. Rabbi Yosi says that a mechitza that's hanging above the surface is good even on dry land. Ditznan, as we learn in a Mishnah in Shabbos, in Sukkah, hamashalshal defonis milamayla lamata, if a person, when he's making a sukkah, if he starts weaving or otherwise lowering the mechitzas, the walls of the sukkah, from the top to the bottom, so he starts at the top of the sukkah next to the sach and works his way down. So bisman shegvoris min haaretz gimel tefachim, if the mechitzas end up 3 or more tefachim above the ground, psula, then the sukkah is possible because then it's a mechitzat tzluya. On the other hand, mimata lamayla, on the other hand, if he starts at the ground and works his way up, im gvoyas yud tefachim kshera, then once he reaches a height of 10 tefachim, it's kosher, and we don't care that there's a lot of vertical space between the top of the wall and the sach, because that's fine as long as the wall is within 3 tefachim of the ground and 10 tefachim tall. And the Mishnah continues, Rabbi Yosi says, no, Kashem Shemilamata Lamaila Asara, just like you only need 10 Tfachim when you start from the bottom and work your way up, Kach Milamaila Lamata Asara, the same thing when you're going from the top to the bottom, you also only need 10. In other words, Rabbi Yosi is saying, Mechitza Tzluya is fine. It's above 3 Tfachim from the ground, says Rabbi Yosi, I don't care about that. So Rabbi Yehuda in our Mishnah is taking the same view. You have a mechitza tluya over here over the well because it doesn't go down into the pit of the well at all. It's just strictly above it, and Rabbi Yehuda is saying that's good enough. So therefore, that's following the shita of Rabbi Yosi. However, the Gemara says v'loihi, but that's not correct. Loi Rabbi Yehuda savala k'Rabbi Yosi, v'loi Rabbi Yosi savala k'Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yosi don't necessarily agree one with another. They're both saying things about mechitzas tzluyas, but in different scenarios. Reb Yehuda lo savala k'Reb Yosi. We don't have to say that Reb Yehuda necessarily holds like Reb Yosi, because ad kam like ka'amar Reb Yehuda ela be'eruv chatzeres dirabanan. Because after all, what's the case Reb Yehuda is talking about is eruv chatzeres, where the whole thing is only dirabanan. So therefore, he says you can be makel and allow a mechitzas tzluyas. Aval sukkah d'oraisa loy. Maybe Rabbi Yehuda would not necessarily agree with sukkah, which after all is a din d'oraisa, that you need mechitzas. So maybe therefore Rabbi Yehuda would say that no, mechitzas loya is no good. And v'loy Rabbi Yosi savalak Rabbi Yehuda, and vice versa, Rabbi Yosi doesn't necessarily agree with Rabbi Yehuda, because ad kan l'ka'omer Rabbi Yosi ela b'sukkah de'iker esahu. Because after all, what happens? You don't sit in a sukkah that's made properly. You're oivana mitzvahs esah. Okay, it's not a good thing to do. You're oivana mitzvahs esah. You know, as Alter Rebbe says in Igeres HaTshuva ha'or neder, but fine, but there's no actual punishment involved. It's much less serious than a mitzvahs loy esah. So the Alter Rebbe talks about in the first perek of the Geras HaTshuva that you have, on the, when you think of the contrast between a person is over on a mitzvah's eser and a mitzvah's lois eser. So the Gemara in Yuma, brings a braiso, which the Alter Rebbe begins a Geras HaTshuva with, saying that if a person is over on a mitzvah's eser and he does tshuva, then right away he's forgiven. As opposed to if he's over on a mitzvah's lois eser, then he has to wait until Yom Kippur to have his full kapara. So the Alter Rebbe discusses why should that be. So on the one hand, so the thing is, with a mitzvah's eser versus a mitzvah's lois eser, each one has an advantage and a disadvantage compared to the other one. With a mitzvah, a person fails to do a mitzvah's eser, they failed to bring down a certain into the world. And there's no making that up. Mu'uvas lo yuchol liska, and you can't fix it up afterwards. A person didn't sit in a sukkah, there's no way afterwards of making that up. Mashenkin, a lois eser, you can do tshuva, and therefore you're undoing the clipper that you brought into the world. On the other hand, with a mitzvah saseh, you're over on it, it's a shev valtase. You failed to do something. Okay, you were lazy, you didn't do something the Eibishter told you to do. On the other hand, a lois saseh, you actually went against the Eibishter told you not to do this, and you went and did it, which is much more serious. So that's why when it comes to the kapara, you need to wait until Yom Kippur for that. But when it comes to the after effect of it, after you did tshuva, then with having missed the mitzvah saseh, you can never make it up, as opposed to the lois saseh, whatever you did is cleaned up. So the same thing over here. Rabbi Yossi is saying. So the Gemara is saying. Rabbi Yossi would be saying when it comes to sukkah, which is a mitzvah, I say, okay, you don't sit in the sukkah, you didn't bring down the but after all, you're not outgoing and rebelling against what the Eibishter said, and you don't get a punishment for it. Well, so that's no good, right? It's not a kosher sukkah, right? But on the other hand, avol Shabbos the issus skilahu. But when you come to Shabbos, if Shabbos involves an issus skilahu, now okay, here we're not talking about dinim d'araisa. Here we're talking about dinim d'rabbanan of Shabbos. But still, fine. We have a concept that says kol d'tokun rabbanon kein d'araisa tokun. When the chachamim make a takana, they usually make it similar in a certain way, parallel to the din d'araisa that it's related to. So over here, if we have a concept that on Shabbos you need mechitzis, which you do in order to mark off a Rosh Hashanah Yachid, then when the Chachamim say that you need Mechitzis for a certain purpose to be able to carry from one person's Chatzah to another, they're going to have the same rules of Mechitzis. And Shabbos itself is an Isser Skila. It's a Lois Esan, and there's Skila involved. So therefore, it's a Loy Omar. So not necessarily would Rabbi Yossi say that we can be Mekel and allow a Mechitzah that's above the surface of the water and doesn't hang down into the pit at all. So not necessarily are Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi agreeing with each other. So you're going to ask, what about the case where we know where they use the Mechitza Tzoya in Sipori? And you have to ask, after all, whose opinion did they follow in doing it? Rabbi Yossi was the Rav in Sipori. So therefore, the pastorist, if they did something like that, it would have been according to his opinion. But if you're telling me that Yossi doesn't necessarily allow a mechitzat tzoya when it comes to Hilchas Shabbos, only when it comes to Hilchas Sukkah, then after all, who would it have been? So wouldn't that necessarily show that Rabbi Yossi agrees that you can use a mechitzat tzoya on land for Shabbos purposes as well? The answer is, the answer is, it wasn't based on Rabbi Yossi's opinion, it was based on Rabbi Shmuel, but Rabbi Yossi's opinion, his son. So fine, Rabbi Yossi passed away, his son took over as Rav, and Rabbi Shmuel, didn't necessarily agree with his father. His father might have held that Mechitza Tloya applies on land only to Sukkah, and Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yossi would have held that it could apply to Shabbos as well. Well, the halacha is not like that, Bechlal. A Mechitza Tloya never works unless you're dealing with water. This is another one of those Talur Sheikelo Chachamim Mayim, but even then, for example, in our Mishnah, when we say in our Mishnah that Rabbi Yehuda is saying the wall over the well should be good enough, the halacha is not like him in that. The halacha is, you still need, as we said before, you need a wall that goes down into the well to some extent. Either it needs to start at the top and go down 10 tefachim and the bottom tefach of it is below the water, or the other way around, it starts at the bottom and goes up 10 tefachim and one tefach sticks up above the water, so you still need that. So Mechitza Tloya is not good. With the exception, we said you can have a Kod Arba, you can have a beam 4 tefachim wide across the thing, and that's good enough on the grounds of Pitikur Yerud V'Soysim. But generally speaking, so Mechitza Tloya is still going to apply. We're going to learn it tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, when you have or we're going to learn it in one of the next couple of days when you have the case we talked about before about porches that stick out above the water and you build a mechitza underneath it in order to be able to draw water from the lake or whatever. So that, there we allow mechitza tloya. But there you have an actual one thing is there you have an actual mechitza 10 tefachim tall that you built for the purpose. Again, like the Rosh makes the distinction over here, the mechitza that goes over the well over here, the mechitza that divides the two chatzeres, was never even built for the purposes of dividing the well for Shabbos, so that there's no heker in it. As opposed to when you have your porch and you make your mechitza from it, at least you have a heker over there. So there we say that kalu sheke lo chachamim mayim. It has to be at least, well, we'll learn about that tomorrow, Beis Hashem, so for one of the next couple of days. Okay. Anyway, so what was that story? So what was that story in Sipodi where they used the Mechitza Tloya? So the key Oster of Dimi Omer, when Reb Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael, he reported the following story. Pamachas Shohu, one time in a Mavui, they forgot to bring the Sefer Torah to the shul before Shabbos. Now, usually what they would do is that usually they would store it in somebody's house. And then on Shabbos, they would bring it to shul, and they would lay it over there. So 1 week, they forgot to bring it before Shabbos. Now, they have a chotzer in the way. The chotzer where the Sefer Torah was located didn't have an eruv with the chotzer where they had the shul. So what are they going to do? How are they going to bring over the Sefer Torah? L'mocha persu sodin ala amudim. The next day, on Shabbos, they spread sheets on pillars. He had pillars along the way over there. They hung sheets from the pillars to make mechitzas. This way, you have mechitzas that are continuous with the mechitza of the chotzer. So they made sort of like a shvil. They made sort of like a path between the sheets over there, which are therefore considered mechitzas. The chotzer is not a problem because the chotzer is not directly open to it. You only have this opening that they made over there, this like mavui cotton Rashi describes. So now they're able to bring it. They view a Sefer Torah of a Kodoboy, and they were able to bring the Sefer Torah, and they were able to lay with it. Now the point is, these siddinim, these sheets were more than three tefachim off the ground. They didn't hang them all the way down to the ground. They were hanging more than three tefachim above the ground. No, it was this way. It was hanging vertically, but they still had. So it's going from the tops of the pillars. They attached them to the tops of the pillars, and then they're hanging down, and the bottom of them is more than three tefachim off the ground. And still, it was allowed. So that's the Gemara asked. Wouldn't that have been according to Rabbi Yossi? Because Rabbi Yossi was the Rav in Sipodi, and that would show that Rabbi Yossi allows that. And the answer is no. This was after Rabbi Yossi passed away, and Rabbi Shmuel, but Rabbi Yossi took over. So Rabbi Shmuel, but Rabbi Yossi is more makel than his father. But yeah. So let's look at the Rashi v'loy hevi sefer Torah. We'll understand a little better.
You're not supposed to build a mechitza on Shabbos. What are we talking about?
You know what? You have a good point. So let's actually learn the next line. Let's actually learn the next line of the Gemara because how can you build mechitza on Shabbos? Let's learn the next line of the Gemara. Then we'll talk about what Rashi says, what the scenario was. So good. Thank you. So the Gemara asks, what do you mean? Perusu v'chachilu mishori? What do you mean? They put sheets on the pillars. How are you allowed to do that on Shabbos? V'ha kol modim she'en osin oil arai v'Shabbos. Everybody agrees that you can't put up a temporary tent on Shabbos. Now we learned. Even for a Sefer Torah. But we'll get to the Rashi in a minute. Let's first. The Rashi is a Loi Heviyu Sefer Torah, but we'll get to that in a minute. Let's first finish the Gemara. Right now we're still doing the Gemara. Yeah. So the Gemara asks, Perisu l'chatchila mishori. What do you mean? They're not allowed to spread out curtains over there to make a mechitza. You can't make an oil arai on Shabbos. Now we've learned in Shabbos that Rashi actually holds there may not be a problem with making a temporary mechitza. There might only be, according to Rashi, a problem making a temporary roof on Shabbos. However, here where you're making the mechitza for the purpose of being able to carry, even Rashi would agree you can't do that on Shabbos. Even enough, yeah. So how could you do that? Ella, no. What the scenario was? Motzu sdinin prusin ala mudim. They found, oh, good. Somebody had put up sdinim on the pillars before Shabbos, and therefore they view a sefer Torah of a Kodoboy, and therefore they were able to bring the sefer Torah and lane with it. In other words, Bashkacha put up that somebody had put up sdinim before Shabbos. But the point is, still, maybe whatever it was, the point is the sdinim was still more than three tefachim between the bottom of the sodden and the ground. It was still more than three tefachim, and if they hadn't held like Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi, then they wouldn't have been able to, it wouldn't have helped them anyway. Only because Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi holds even more makel than his father, as we said, that a mechitzit tfluya is always good, unlike Rabbi Yossi himself, who says it only works by sukkah, then therefore that enabled them to bring the Sefer Torah. So now let's look at the Rashi in order to understand the scenario a little better. So Rashi says, V'loy heviru Sefer Torah, l'beisak nesis, so they hadn't brought the Sefer Torah to shul, over chotzer acheres hava, the Sefer Torah was located in a different shul, and actually Marshaw on the side over here says that it's supposed to be of a chotzer achas she'enum o'rebbe, so it was in a different chotzer where they didn't have an eruv together, a joint eruv, together with the chotzer where the shul is located. So they have to bring the Sefer Torah through a chotzer that doesn't have an eruv with it. So they spread sheets, they hung sheets from the pillars, or as we just said in the Gemara, they didn't actually hang them on Shabbos, they found them hanging from before Shabbos. This way, it's a mechitza that divides next to the mechitzas of the chotzer, from the house where the Sefer Torah was located until the shul. So they had like a small mavui, just enough to be able to walk between the sheets and the walls of the chotzer. So the fact that the rest of the people of the chotzer live there is not going to aser it. Because you don't have any other opening from this pathway between the sedinim, there's no other opening open into the chotzer. Only that opening, only the house that they started from. So in effect, in other words, what they did is now you have a mini chotzer that only has one house opening into it, and a chotzer with only one house opening into it doesn't need a eruv. These sheets constituted a mechitza tfluya. So it worked in terms of the dinim of Rishuyas. The only question, it worked in terms of the dinim of Eruv Chatzeres. The only question is, does it work as, is this bechlal considered a mechitza? So the Chachamim, including the Chachamim, including Rabbi Yossi, the Gemara is saying, would hold that no. Mechitza tfluya only helps, according to Rabbi Yossi, by sukkah, according to the Chachamim, not even there. But Rabbi Shmuel, but Rabbi Yossi holds that it works on land all the time, even when it comes to Hilchos Shabbos, and therefore it worked in this case. No, it wouldn't really matter. Once he says mechitza tloya is matter, then it wouldn't matter. That means, in other words, no, that's the thing. As we said before, kol the tokun rabbanon kein d'oraisa tokun. If we're saying it works in this case, the rabbanon, it must mean he holds it works even on a d'oraisa level, even where mechitzas are needed on a d'oraisa level. So now, then the sudden is not hanging to the wall. The sudden is hanging parallel to the wall. You have the wall over here, and you have the sudden a few feet away from it. There's only one door open into the area between the sedinim. No, the people walking through, because if their houses don't open into it, then it's like guests. It's not like people walking. Yeah. So. Right. So therefore they were good. But the reason why we brought that in, the Gemara thought that Rabbi Yossi would have allowed this, and wouldn't that show that Rabbi Yossi allows mechitza tfluya on land? And the answer is that no, this is Rabbi Shmuel, but Rabbi Yossi allowed this. Okay, so we'll continue tomorrow, Bez Hashem, with more on this topic about mechitza tfluyas and who holds what about it. So we're up to five lines from the bottom now. The line begins Al Hamudim. Tomorrow, Bez Hashem. Shkayach, everyone.